Welcome everybody on the telephone. We'll be going live here in just a few moments with our call. Welcome to the call. If you have any questions tonight, feel free to text at 801-541-9181. That's 801-541-9181. We're going live here in just about one. Well, here we are at 7 o'clock. Here we go. Well, welcome to this wonderful time of celebration that we have every Tuesday night as we go into one more quality of an intentional creator. Many of you have had the opportunity to be either personally coached or you've gone through a group coaching session and you've been studying these principles. We're not going to talk about a lot of new things tonight. This is an opportunity for us to talk about things that matter most, and in discussing them, make an increased commitment to apply them in our lives so that we can start to experience the benefits of following principles and practices and processes that lead to success. I'm so excited tonight because we have a couple of guests here with us. I'm going to turn the camera to the right so that you can see them. And here we go, everybody. Can everybody see? Say hi to Ramona. Ramona's with us every Tuesday night. And we have Eric Welsh and Andrea Davis. And Eric and Andrea are leaders in the company Zengo. They happen to have been in town for the last couple of days meeting with their corporate office on a very special and fun project. And it's great to have them. They're going to be guests in our home tonight. Great friends. We had the privilege of being in Wisconsin with them just a few weeks ago and being at Andrea's parents' home at the lakeside, sitting around a fire pit having a conversation, talking about those things that matter most. And it's always wonderful to have great friends. It's one of the benefits I have in working with the Augmandino Group is being able to meet such wonderful people and get inside their hearts. And I've often said this, and I'll say it again tonight, if people knew how much the coach gets from coaching, people wouldn't pay us. So it's always wonderful to have great people. Those of you who are on the telephone, you don't have the privilege of seeing them. Just know they're as beautiful and handsome as I have said they are. So it's great to be with you. We've been talking about these qualities of an intentional creator. First of all, the art of connection, stepping into someone's world and taking down their walls of resistance, being that safe place by listening, creating a safe place by asking empathetic questions, questions born out of our own life experiences, having their walls come down, gaining agreement and being able to share with them ideas and suggestions, products, services, business opportunities, instead of throwing up on their wall in excitement or trying to tear it down with a sledgehammer. I had a visual this week I shared with a client. I'll share with all of you. There were two people on this call, and one was a sledgehammer. He's working his way past it. Just in his excitement, he just wants to just break down people's walls with excitement. And the other one's this masterful listener. And I was saying, I want you to envision a stepladder by the side of this big wall. And the first gentleman's on the stepladder. Now, he's not there anymore, so I can talk about this, but back in the old day when he had this giant sledgehammer of excitement just pounding on this, he's going to get through this wall, he's going to get into them, he's going to tell them exactly why they should be doing what he wants them to do. And the other person just walks up to the front door and knocks, and they open the door, and she steps in and sits down. I said, and all of a sudden he looks over the top of the wall, and there they are having a cold drink, enjoying a beautiful summer day, having a conversation about what matters most, and he's sitting here holding his sledgehammer saying, what's wrong with this picture? What's wrong with this picture? We can, in our excitement, break down walls. We can try to be strategic. Strategic meaning that we are waiting for that little opening, you know, to pounce on somebody like a fox on a mouse. Or we can just honor someone, step into their world, and listen. In today's world, with everything that's going on, and I spend time in people's lives sometimes 8 to 9 times a day, and there are times when I finish coaching sessions that I just, I don't mind telling you, I drop to my knees. I've wept, I've prayed for them. because of what's going on in people's lives. There are so many with stories, and there are just far too few listeners. Far too few. I've shared this before. When was the last time someone cared enough about you to just listen? Just listen. Until you knew they knew where you were. They didn't try to fix you. When's the last time that happened? I've asked that question thousands of times, and I can't remember more than 10 or 15 responses in all the years I've coached. Oh! I remember one in Houston, a client said, it happened 3 years ago when I was at a dinner. Generally, it's that kind of a story. 3 years ago when I was at a dinner. Or I've got this friend who can do this, or maybe my spouse does it. It is really time for us to make an absolute commitment to become that unique and rare person. The world desperately needs you. Og said this is the greatest secret of success. Let it not be a secret any longer. Let's let it out. Let's let the world hear it. When you go back to the story of the greatest salesman in the world, these secrets were kept by the people who had the scrolls. They learned them, practiced them, and they didn't tell anybody. This is Scott Irwin when I taught it to him the first time, who's on our board, and he said, gosh, does anybody else know about this? And I said, there are a few. And he says, can we keep this to ourselves? Because he knew what was possible. He since has said, I've made millions and saved millions of dollars using these principles. Well, in the very story, Hafid was to get them, and then he was to give them to the next person who would then share them with the world. Sometimes we forget that piece in the story. They are now to be shared with the world. Now, that was a story. It wasn't a true event. But the message is clear. We are to be ambassadors of this principle. I'll greet this day with love in my heart, this agape love, this heightened level of awareness. We can do a lot of wonderful things in our life, but I don't think we want to leave this planet without working on this principle. And we go from that to using our mind constructively. All of you on this phone have brilliant minds. Now I want you to hear what your self-esteem advisor just said to you when I said that. Yes, but he doesn't know. Oh, you've got brilliant minds. The ability to vividly visualize this enormous capacity. And the truth is, most of us, I'm talking about 98%, use this gift destructively. We use it to escape into the future, to a time when we're rich, and then we begin living beyond it. Now, many of you have the measurement goal-oriented and that mental creation section of your assessment read, I do. I have to be hypervigilant. I know when I'm having one of those days of ugh and overwhelm, all I have to do is look back over the last 12 to 24 hours and I can identify going into the future and then living beyond it. We won't spend time tonight on what happens. We just know that when we do this, instead of focusing between here and there and doing the millimeters, when we go beyond it, we assume this is already in place and begin living it. We set ourselves up for one of the most amazing physiological realities, an autonomic response, something you cannot control. And it has been beating the poop out of so many people for so long because there are those who want us to believe we can magically manifest tangible reality by vividly visualizing, as if there's some fantasy fairy, you know, it's going to anoint us if we'll just do with enough intention. And people who have adhered to that doctrine have been left broke, broken, and angry. The only people who are wealthy are those selling the doctrine. That's a tragedy. With what we now know and are teaching, I almost think it's criminal. Because it's playing into a significant weakness. I'm manipulating a person into hoping there's a way to have a life that's easier, with more comfort. Who wouldn't want it when you're dealing with some of the strains in today's life? Our invitation is to engage. Stop trying to escape to a time when and living beyond. Because there is no power. And you know my belief. I believe there is a God in heaven. Whatever you want to call that God or your definition, I have no judgment. I have my own. I just know this principle, and it's true. There is no power in this universe that will ever grant to you that which would allow you to skip the very process that will cause you to stretch and grow and become all you're meant to be. That would be counterproductive. Og says, I'm on this earth for a purpose. And that purpose is to grow into a mountain. To take what I've been given and make the most I can with it. Said, I will strain my potential until it cries for mercy. Wow. To become the highest mountain of all. He goes on later to say, this isn't in comparison to others. This is as much as I can create with what I've been given. We do not want to get to the end of our life. And Ramona and I have had some really poignant conversations about that after our 59th birthday. As we're entering this new phase of life, of 60 and older, we're getting very close. You don't want to get to the end of your life and look back and say, whew, I skipped all those stretch and grow things. You know, I really had a wonderful, mediocre life. You know, I just took it easy. I didn't magnify my gifts or talents. I really didn't push myself. I don't think we're going to be there. We're going to have regrets. We'll look back and see everything that could have been that never was. We don't want to be in that space. The definition of success is that I have chosen to intentionally create my life. That's the definition of success. It's not how much you create. It's not your house compared to someone else's house. It's your life compared to your life. What is possible versus what was created? And when we fall short of what's possible, that's the definition of failure. Man's inability to accomplish his goals, whatever they may be. That's what Og said. Well, the definition of success is engaging in life. Instead of seeking ease, where there's consequences, we're seeking to create. We want to become creators of our life. So we engage, we embrace principles, we connect, we serve, we create value everywhere we go. And a critical piece of this is what we do with our mind. Is our mind secretly set on becoming rich so that we can avoid the rigors of life? Secretly. Let us be honest with each other tonight. Is that what I've really wanted? Do I just want to have so much money I don't have to deal with it anymore? No more stress or pain or frustration. Because that's a very interesting approach, because success requires, it's not an option. If we choose success, it requires that we gain ever-increasing ability to handle ever-increasing levels of stress with ever-increasing levels of ease. The task is still there. It just becomes easier to do because we've gained the ability to do so. So at the center of how we use our mind is really our intention. What is it we really want to create? Do we just want to buy that tropical island so we can tell all those annoying people to get out of our lives? Do we want to put a gate around our lives so we don't have to deal with anybody? If so, what a wonderful moment in time to say, wow, maybe that's why it's not working. I put targets on people. I try to get them to do what I need them to do, not because I really care, because I need to pretend I care so they'll do it, so I don't have to deal with them anymore. I mean, that sounds crazy, but sometimes we process this way. And all of a sudden, the invitation is to become an intentional creator of our life, to take whatever clay we have and create the most we can with it. Oh, I do hope you take this invitation, because that's where the joy is. That's when we begin to fill the void in our soul. That's when we meet our true self, our real self, our genuine self, our authentic self. That's where we get plugged into the planet. So we'll want to use our mind constructively. We'll come back to it here in a few weeks. Some of you have the book. All of you have your Intentional Creation Studio. Go in there and listen to that section. Matter of fact, I've had some people sharing with me lately, they've been downloading these sections from the Intentional Creation Studio onto their smartphones. They've been listening to them, driving to and from work. Some interesting places. One shared that he has a great sound system in his shower. So he gets 15 or 20 minutes of these principles every morning. What a great way to start the day. You've got 30 hours of material in your Intentional Creation Studio. You've got another 15 to 18 hours from the coaching sessions that you went through if you were in a group. And now you've got these sessions which are recorded and placed on your Intentional Creation Studio each week to go back and refer to. So let us make this decision to focus our mind on creating value and connecting and serving people. Because then the magic happens. We get to be a partner with the power in the universe, God. Because our heart is no longer, I want to just manifest this richness so that I can get away from the world. We're actually saying, what could I create? How could I create that? And how will that bless this person and this person? That is a request that will be granted. You'll receive an inspired idea, an impression, a solution to a challenge. I'm sitting here right now with two people who practice this all of the time. I can't wait till they announce to the world the project they've been working on, because it's been one mental rehearsal after another. True? Yeah. One inspired idea on top of another inspired idea. And it's wonderful when like-minded people get together sharing inspired ideas, because it just elevates the whole thing. And the underlying purpose is always the same: blessing a human being. Ah. And when that's what we want to do, when that is our desire, we open up the windows of heaven and we can receive the guidance. And what we do know is this: you're built for this. You're not built to fantasize. You fantasize, autonomic reaction that's brutal. You get spanked by the baseball bat of life. When you engage your vivid visualization in ways to create value in the world of another person, in the life of another person, when you get those inspired ideas and part of your brain lights up that is normally dormant in all human beings, it ignites your passion. That takes us to the third quality. We bring that passion into the now, and we work passion-driven, vision-driven, mission-driven. The work still must be done, but we're not trying to skip past it and then live the rewards. We're actually engaged in creating it. We're enjoying the journey. We're enjoying each mile marker in the journey, each millimeter, each step. We're enjoying the process of creation. That's what happens in the physical world. In the mind, we get the idea that ignites the passion. That's the gift vivid visualization gives us. I hope everybody gets this. The gift vivid visualization gives us is the igniting of the passion necessary to sustain the physical creation of that vision. That's what the vivid visualization is for. Ignite passion, then we do the work. Ignite passion, we do the work. This is an incredible partnership of mental and physical creation. You see the challenge when we try to create physically with the mind? We're really frustrating the program. If we use it to get passion, then the work we do is passion-driven. If not, we're trying to skip the work and just live in our mind the benefits. And all of a sudden, you face the reality. We all do. We face the reality of doing the work. And it's boring. And it's mundane. And it's repetitious. And it's burdensome. And it's hard. This is where our nation is right now. This is where we are. We're in the grind of doing the work without vision. And it's hard. people say to me all the time, Dave, I don't know how much longer I can do this. Well, you probably can't. Unless we start using our mind constructively, get outside of ourselves, we start focusing on other people. And what could I create in their life? What could I create that's of value? And when I create that, ultimately I'm blessed. I become the person who can have the things that I want to have in my life. And frankly, some of those things change. So, now we're in passion-driven action. And we're taking the action. Last week we talked about power sessions. The power session was designed for you, first of all, to personally discover how little time you spend with your mind and your body in the same place engaged in the physical creation of your dreams. This is a great discovery. When we discover it, some of us get discouraged. We say, golly, how am I supposed to do this? If I'm not present, I can't do the creation. I'm a loser. No, you're not a loser. You are willing to take a look. So I've shared with all of you, 3,500 plus coaching clients, probably getting very close to 4,000 now. We had our eighth person I have right here, a letter from her. Let me show you a picture for those of you. Can you see her? She's 89 years old. This is Iris Deanne. Iris, 89 years old. She's number 8 to do this the first week. And she's creating miracles in her life. Oh, it's not for you to go, wow, I wasn't number 8, I'm a loser. First of all, it's to say, wow, that's what's been keeping me. If I start being present in the now, passion-driven, then I can start to create intangible reality. And when I'm actually in creation, magnifying all of my natural gifts and strengths, I am actually spending time with my real self, my genuine self. I'm embracing my genus, my genius, in the service of others. I start to heal my self-esteem. Remember, if I have expectations that are unmet, I beat myself up. When I'm fully engaged in the now, mind and body in the same place, I'm spending time with the real me. This is such a gift to give yourself. And you know in our discussion last week that when we're fully present here, we're actually given more. This is a true principle, but not until we fully maximize our current gifts. Well, here we are. Those are the three foundational principles. That's what the book's all about. Today I begin a new life. We have some challenges, however. Many of you have been bumping into them. Some of you have been through the coaching program and now going through these qualities 1, 2, maybe 3, maybe 4 times. Today's your day. This is your day to finally take back control of your mind. This is the bottom left-hand side of your assessment. This is an interesting place. Let me grab an assessment report. This is called Discipline and Structure. Oops, sweetheart, could you find me one that's got the new structure on it? Here it is, okay. Discipline and Structure. These are called systemic thoughts. These are thoughts that exist only in our mind. These are thoughts that process dualistically. We've shared this before. All, nothing, right, wrong, win, lose. If you're watching the video, I've got my hands apart. See this? There's nothing in between. It is either or. Right, wrong, win, lose, life, death. These are very powerful thought processes that can serve us, and they can also create some serious challenges. The first measurement is disciplined. The question is, do we have our thought processes? Do they have an intrinsic appreciation for the rules? Do they? The vast majority of you, 99.5%, the answer is no. If you and I step back and ask discipline, how do you feel about the rules? Discipline would say, well, I tell David to follow the rules, but only if they make sense. Now, this is an entrepreneurial characteristic. Is this a bad thing to have this measurement orange or red when it's telling me to follow the rules only if they make sense? Well, it would be a bad thing if I'm an airline pilot. I'm looking at the pre-flight checklist. let's not check that one. I don't want to follow that one. You know, pretty soon we crash an airplane and kill hundreds of people. Entrepreneurs, however, want to be able to think outside the box. That's what makes them so powerful. They're not stuck looking at something the way other people might look at it. Well, that's just the way it's been. That's the way we've always done it. It's not broken. Why fix it? Well, let's see here. We're wasting about 600 hours a month. Why don't we try to figure out how to save that? That's what an entrepreneur is doing. They're always coming up with ideas, creative ideas, to think outside the box. That's a great gift. Now, every entrepreneur is going to have this discipline structure, discipline measurement, probably green or orange and maybe even red. As it gets orange and red, there's an increasing difficulty that when they decide how the box should look, you know, I'm thinking outside the box. I'm not stuck with a status quo. This is how I think we ought to do it. They can get increasingly stuck on saying, now everybody jump into this box. Thanks for the chuckle. This is the way. No, it just happens to be this entrepreneur's way, and another entrepreneur is going to have another idea and another idea, and this becomes a challenge. Just know we can get stuck on the idea. Also know that there are a lot of people with this measurement orange who are not entrepreneurs. They want to be, but they don't quite understand this great principle. When we work for someone else, they're the boss. We do what they tell us to do. That's an employer-employee relationship. Now, entrepreneurs have an employer-employee mentality, slightly different. The employer is them. They applied for the job and they got hired. The employee is their thought processes. This is what Og means when he said, I will command. I will command. And I, my thought processes, will obey my command. I am not going to allow this resistance to structure, this desire to quit my job, fire my boss. I want time freedom, financial freedom. I want life to be easier and more comfortable. And I'm wandering around in my house at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in my bunny slippers, believing I'm in business. We're not in business. We're in trouble. If we're in business, we're the boss. We would have gotten us out of bed a lot earlier. We would have had a schedule for the day, and we'd be keeping it. We would choose that at 2 o'clock we can go to the baseball game and be back by 4 and be back to work. That's what we get to choose. We don't choose if we work. We choose when we work. That's an entrepreneur. Huge difference. So just examine this measurement in your assessment and say, have I applied for the job of being the boss of my life? Anthos hectic, am I being my true self, acting on my own moral authority, doing the next right thing for the right reason because I want to get to and choose to? Or am I resisting my own structure? And what happens when someone tries to impose it on me? That's the teachable measurement. How do I feel about that person? I had so much fun in a coaching session the other day. I was sharing this story. I said, anybody with an orange or a red in teachable, anybody work for a boss who is stupid? Now, that's common vernacular, but I didn't want to offend, but I wanted to chuckle a little bit, lighten up, because these measurements don't have a funny bone. I said, anybody work for somebody who's stupid? And I heard a yes in the background. I stated, if your measurement's orange, you probably have done what they ask while you're saying to yourself, you're stupid. If it's red, you probably didn't do it, and you probably verbalized, you're stupid. And somebody came off of mute and laughed so hard and said, oh, I have been fired from so many jobs. That's why. Oh, my goodness. They finally grasped this principle. that we don't have as entrepreneurs a practical appreciation for people in positions of authority. Entrepreneurs value people in positions of authority based on their contribution, not on their position. Vice president, so what? He's an idiot. Manager? Brilliant. The janitor had the most amazing conversation. He saw something we needed to do here. They value the person based on contribution, not title. Now, if your measurement happens to be red, it is time for us to start managing it just a little differently. Just write baby with the bathwater. The baby is the nugget, the valuable piece. The bathwater is representing who's presenting it. We may throw out the value in the message based on the person who's presenting it and how they're presenting it. What you'll want to write down on your notes tonight is, I want to become a gleaner of information. A gleaner. We may not like the way the person looks or acts. They may push a systemic button. They remind us of our mother or our father or a former spouse. Could be all those things. But let us not get the button pushed and ignore the message, because we could miss a nugget, and we don't want to miss one. So if that teachable measurement's there, just know that it's there. But also know it's entrepreneurial. It's how entrepreneurs think. Some aren't quite as rebellious as others, and some people are driven to be entrepreneurial because they've been kind of on a tirade of rebellion all their life from authority. I'll be darned if anybody's going to control me. And they do control their work, and sometimes they're the fiercest bosses of all. And their purpose for it isn't to create, it's to avoid being controlled. Interesting motivation. It's exhausting, but it's an interesting motivation. That's teachable. Analytical. Analytical is just a measurement that tells me how much time you spend thinking about thinking. What do you do to shut off your mind? Remember this when we did your assessment debrief? What do you do to shut off your mind? People say, I drink. I hear I sleep. I do yoga. I listen to music. I exercise. I don't always, but most people can say that. I was hoping to get a chuckle out of the back of the room for that. She kicked me in the shin and said, yep. We just have an obsessive thought process. Now remember, all or nothing, right or wrong, win or lose, life or death. To effortlessly think is a gift. Effortlessly. For some people, this is painful. You give them an assignment, it's like, work. And they miss a lot of things because it's painful to look at everything. And you've got this capacity to just examine every nook and cranny effortlessly. You're still thinking when you're lying in bed at night and up in the morning and sometimes in the middle of the night. It's just going all the time. Great gift. Challenge. Because it's dualistic, we can get attached to it. Some of you don't just need to be right. Some of you, in fact, are. Life experience and the capacity with which you vividly are looking at possibilities, you've considered everything. You really, truly have come up with a great idea. Challenge. 95% of the time. And with 3 points for a statistical variation, could be 98 in some instances, 95%+ of the time, a person cannot separate their idea from their self-worth. They are inextricably connected. Those on video, you can see I've got my fingers intertwined, squeezing my palms together. So when we feel so strongly about something that someone else needs to be wrong, 95% plus the time, they are also being crushed in their self-esteem. And how you know this is when the roles are reversed. When someone else needs to be right, and they need to make you wrong, how does it feel? Take a look at the top right-hand side of your assessment and just take a quick peek. Huh. What buttons are they pushing? Are they questioning your worth and worthiness? Are they questioning your ability? Are they questioning your belief systems when they won't listen to your idea? It is personal. to someone who obsessively thinks, because you are so personally invested in the idea. Well, that brings us to our lessons for tonight. We have some other thought processes here in terms of methodical, which just tells us if we really are getting attached at a high level. We have consistent, which tells us what happens when we schedule a big task we really don't want to do, when we schedule just far enough away that it feels safe, but close enough we can feel good that it's on the calendar. And then the days go by and we finally get there. Do our thoughts ever talk us out of doing it? All those other really important things we could be doing instead of. It's like we should have on our door this big note that says, interruptions welcomed. Please, anything, so I don't have to do this. And so I can justify not doing it and scheduling again and feeling good that it's safe enough away but close enough that I don't have to feel guilty about it. If consistent's orange, just know that pattern's probably there. Have some fun with that one. I think for now, let's stop right there. I want to go back to analytical because this one is at the core of the two lessons we want to experience tonight. Now, when you've gone through the coaching, you have had both of these shared with you. Some of you did it once. It is time now to do it at a higher level, at a higher level. The first one is looking for the good in another person's idea. Remember? If we need to be right, someone else needs to be crushed because their idea is tied to their self-esteem. This is a tremendous thing to know. Because we can then step back from our idea and think at a higher mathematical level. See, right, wrong thinking is as low as it can get on a mathematical scale. That's as low as it gets. We can go from that to a practical view. From a practical standpoint, it would be wise if I took down their wall of resistance. From an even higher level, intrinsic view, they are priceless and unique, and I would never want to hurt them. But this thought process over here is going to be screaming, don't do this! They're going to think you agree with them, and you're not going to get your way! Because remember, it has no option. It has to be right. Because to be wrong is to be non-existent. It's to die! It won't do that. You can step back from it because you're not going to die. You step back from it. Listen carefully to the person. Let's practice this week. Let's find ourselves multiple times during the course of the week actually verbalizing the words, when we find good in a person's idea, what I like best about your idea is... Systemic thinks it's now going to, the world's coming to an end. You just violated every systemic rule. True. But you're following a higher law. From a practical standpoint, you're taking down walls. Intrinsic perspective, you're valuing the person. When we find good in their idea, 95% plus of the time, we're finding good in them. Which means they now feel understood. And when someone feels understood, what happens to their walls? They come down. Now we can have a conversation. But two people with their heels buried in the sand, line drawn, it's on principle, shouting from the porch. We can't convince a person against their will. We can crush them. And we can crush them. I wrote in the book about this. I was talking with the wife of a husband or wife that I was coaching, and I said, we can blow apart a marriage based on the correct topping for a pizza, pepperoni or sausage. She said, no, actually, it was a bagel. It cannot distinguish the seriousness, but you can. And it is the hardest thought process to step back from, but you can step back. And more often when you do, and you find good, and the wall comes down, and the conversation's different, we gain confidence in the principle. The more we do it, the greater our confidence in the principle, and frankly, the more successful we are. This is one of the abilities we're going to want to gain. When I say gaining the ability to handle ever-increasing levels of stress with ever-increasing levels of ease, there are few things as stressful as a right wrong conversation. Do you agree with me? Oh my goodness, I wrote about this in the book, In the Furnace of Adversity. Being in a right-wrong, arrow, spear, rocket, bomb conversation with someone for several years, and then releasing this. Oh my goodness. Imagine just being able to step back, look for the good, notice it, verbalize it, walls come down, conversation, all the stress that's eliminated. Same conversation, just handled differently. This is gaining ability. When Og says, I don't seek for gold or garments or even opportunities equal to my ability, which means equal to my current ability. Instead, I seek to acquire ability, new ability. And when I do, there is new opportunity. If you need opportunity, then acquire ability. And this is one of them that you're going to want to absolutely acquire, looking for and finding the good in a person's idea. Just know it's hard to find it first, because systemic thought processes, they're going to die if you find it. It can't be there. It can't be there for it to be right. But it's there. And you find one good idea, you'll find two, you'll find three, you'll be surprised how many. You can do this in group settings. You go back to the book and the material, it talks about how to do this in a group, where you might turn, if we had Ramona and Eric and Andrea in a room and I were conducting a meeting and I said, this is our agenda item for the day, Andrea, would you share with us how you would solve it? And Andrea speaks, we get done, I say, Ramona, what did you like best? Eric, what did you like best? Then I share what I like best. Then I turn to Eric and I ask him what he would do. Then I ask Ramona what she liked best, and Andrea what she liked best. Then I share what I like best. And we go around the room and do that, and we're the last to share. And most of the time, you'll discover there's very little to add. There might be, you know, in addition to these things, the only thing I can see I'd add is this. And then we ask them, what do you think of that, Ramona? Well, what I like best about that idea is this. And Eric says, what I like best is this. And Andrea says, what I like best is this. And we've got the best of the best. Everybody now has reached a consensus, not on how to do it, but on great ideas. Everybody feels ownership. From here, we can come up with a solution. It may not be perfectly what I wanted, or Ramona, or Eric, or Andrea. But everybody's engaged in the creation of it. No more pushing a rope or the wet noodle. We now have people pulling the project forward. They have a sense of ownership. They feel valued. They feel understood. They feel important. Oh, could we use this in the hallways of corporate America? This is a huge challenge. Many leaders believe that if they don't have the answer, they're weak. The truth is, a great leader is great because of their ability to pull greatness out of their people. That's the great leader. Pull that greatness out of them. In corporate America, we sometimes come up here to a position, we pull up the ladder so nobody can get here. And we're like fighting off anybody from advancing or improving. We got to keep everybody in their place. What a sad story. We rob all of them of participation, feeling valued, bringing all of their cooperation, productivity. The manager really robs their performance. They can't do it all. And we see this in a hierarchical organization, corporate America, all the time. It's tragic. Let us look for the good. You can shift the energy in a conversation, like in a committee meeting, by simply saying, you know what I like best about that idea is this. And turn to someone else. What did you like best about that idea? Whew. Beautiful. What can be done? That's one. Number two, I want you to pick the person. Now, this isn't true for everybody on the phone, just most. The person who's been most adversely impacted when you have surrendered your will to this measurement, and you need to be right. You might be right. And as a result, you really need to be right. Who is impacted by this? Is it a child? Is it a spouse? Is it a business partner? Who gets the wrath of this systemic thought? Sometimes it's somewhat passive-aggressive in its nature. But who gets this? What would happen if we sat down with them And we said, what's it been like to be in a relationship with me when I let these thought processes run the show and I need to be right? What's that like for you? This is the ultimate power session. This is the ultimate intrinsic validation. I believe this is as high as it goes, where we're willing to create a safe enough place for someone we care about to share what it's like for them to be in a relationship with us when we need to be right, and give them the space. And all we say is, tell me more about that. Share with me what you're thinking. Is there anything else you'd like to share? And when they're done, thank you, I'll be working on that one. And being conscious that in the next 12 to 24 hours, if they push the systemic button, my systemic thoughts are going to be turning, trying to figure out a way to fix this, to say it. And now I want to say it really nicely. Like, you know, I love the conversation, best we've ever had. The only thing I was concerned about is you mentioned last Thursday that I said this, and I really didn't say it that way. What I said was this, and I feel so bad. You had to feel so bad for so many days. All we're doing is trying to fix it. Just let it go. Let it go. Give the person you're talking to the gift of a safe place to share what it's like for them when you're in that place. That's your homework assignment. Now, you might have done this with a spouse. It's interesting how many people come back and say, oh, I asked them, and they said, it's not a problem. And I smile and say, wow. Quite often, they're a little afraid to say anything, because even when we're doing the best to set a safe place, we can lash back. We just can't help ourselves, we say. Well, this is one of those occasions now when you bite your tongue. Bite it till it bleeds. Show up. Encourage them to be honest with you so that you can have a feeling for what it's like. Not so that you can take it personally, not so that you can have your feelings hurt, but so that you can see what it's like for them. It will give you courage to show up differently, to bless their lives if you truly care for them. So those are your assignments, looking for what's good. And when you see it, verbalize it. What I like best about your idea is, and second of all, to ask someone what it's been like to be in a relationship and just listen. Do that. Start the process of seeing how these thought processes have been showing up in your life and making the decision to take control. Study Scroll 6 this week. I'll be the master of my emotions, weak as he who allows his thoughts to control his actions. Strong as he who forces his actions to control his thoughts. You can, that's the gift you have as a human being, to step back and take charge of these thought processes and stop letting them create challenges, making life harder than it needs to be. These really are the enemy. We found the enemy, and we found it is our thought processes. Oh my goodness. Let us begin the journey of controlling these systemic thoughts. Now next week when we come back, we're going to go into joy in the journey. I love this section. This is where we start to learn to enjoy the millimeters, to enjoy each day and sometimes taking on and conquering a difficult task. This is where life is lived. We don't want to skip this. This is where it all happens, to find joy in that daily process. That's where we're going to head next week. So enjoy Scroll 6. Come back next week to take on joy in the journey. Thanks for being here, and special thanks to Andrea and Eric for being here with us tonight. It's so fun to have them in our home. I know several of you that are on the phone are going to be coming to other events. We'll have the opportunity to be there, and we've got some fun speaking engagements coming up. We're excited about those, to be able to serve you. Come back next Tuesday night, and let's take this on again. Let's make this a sacred time we spend together every week. Well, thanks, everybody.